this is your Polycast for Thursday, September 22nd, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, the race for control of the legislature shifts into high gear, and plastic pollutes the Mississippi River. There are no major statewide races on the Minnesota ballot this year, but there's still a lot at stake. All 201 legislative seats are up for grabs. Voters will decide which party controls the state Senate for the next 4 years and the House for the next two. The outcome will have a major impact on the final 2 years of DFL Governor Mark Dayton's administration. Tim Pugmire has the story.
Following the chaotic conclusion of the 2016 legislative session, which left transportation and other issues unresolved, Governor Dayton made it clear that he thought divided government was part of the problem. Dayton shared his frustration with Minnesota Democrats back in July during the party's national convention.
You know, I've served 2 years now with the Republican legislature, 2 years with the DFL legislature, and now 2 years with a split. And the difference is night and day. And it's almost as bad having a split as it was having all Republicans, because the Republican House can stymie everything and stop everything and stop us from making the kind of progress that we need.
Dayton wants the DFL to retain its majority in the Minnesota Senate and to gain the 7 seats needed to flip control of the Minnesota House. But House Republicans, who won majority control from the DFL 2 years ago, contend that divided government is what's best for Minnesota. House Speaker Kurt Dowd says voters want political balance.
We think they're going to remember the last time there was single-party control and that Democrats brought them the $90 million Senate office building and MinSure, which has more than doubled the cost of health insurance in the state of Minnesota. And I don't think Minnesotans are going to want to go back to that. So we think they appreciate the things that we've done and the fact that we are the check and balance on the governor's agenda.
Even though all the seats are on the ballot this year, majority control of the House and Senate will be decided in a handful of key districts. And the relative unpopularity of both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton in parts of the state is creating uncertainty about how the top of the ticket will affect local races.
Hi, are you Kevin?
I am.
Kevin, my name is Lindsay Port. I'm running for the Minnesota State House for this area.
Democrat or Republican?
I'm a Democrat.
One of the key contests is in House District 56B, which covers parts of Burnsville and Lakeville. DFLer Lindsay Port, a political activist and first-time candidate, is challenging first-term Republican incumbent Roz Peterson. Challengers here have often knocked off incumbents. Peterson did it 2 years ago. On the campaign trail, Port is talking about the need for state investments.
We need to see investments in this district in our schools. We need to see investments in our roads, critical smart investments, not just throwing money at problems, but making choices to really be intentional about how we are growing our future.
Port supports Clinton for president. Republican Peterson says Trump has to earn her vote. In the meantime, Peterson is busy making her case for re-election by highlighting recent state funding increases for education and nursing homes. She's also stressing the need for fiscal restraint and balance at the Capitol. Peterson is particularly concerned with the cost of Governor Dayton's ongoing push for universal preschool.
That takes away parent choice, and it will decimate an entire industry. So I think that going that direction will not be in the best interest of Minnesotans overall.
In the Minnesota Senate, Republicans would need to pick up 6 additional seats to win back the majority they briefly held in 2011 and 2012. They're targeting a handful of DFL incumbents in rural districts where Mitt Romney won in 2012 and where 2 GOP state representatives currently serve. But DFL Senate Majority Leader Tom Bach said he thinks those incumbents are actually in good shape.
They've done a very, very good job and earned the respect of their constituents that vote for them, and I think they've given them no reason to vote for a change.
The most recent campaign finance reports from July show Senate Democrats had a healthy campaign cash advantage over Republicans. In the House, Republicans and Democrats had similar amounts in their war chests. Minnesota's battleground legislative contests are also drawing the interest of several well-funded independent expenditure organizations. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Farm pollution is still a problem for the Mississippi River, but researchers say they have new concerns they know less about. A new report from the National Park Service and Friends of the Mississippi River details problems ranging from road salt to tiny plastic fibers. Elizabeth Dunbar reports.
When the last State of the River report came out 4 years ago, plastic microbeads were making headlines. The exfoliating beads added to face wash and other personal care products were small enough to make it through wastewater treatment systems and into lakes and rivers. But now the National Park Service says the bigger problem for the Mississippi is plastic fibers.
These are products that we link to synthetic clothing like micro fleece, polyester, nylon.
Lark Weller, one of the report's authors, says 90% of all the microplastics found in the Mississippi were fibers.
That does seem to correlate with findings elsewhere in the country.
Just last week, the U.S. Geological Survey announced finding plastic fibers in tributaries that feed into the Great Lakes. This summer, chemistry professor Lorena Rios Mendoza of the University of Wisconsin-Superior collected samples from Lake Superior near wastewater treatment plants. Sure enough, she found plastic fibers, likely going down the drain when people wash their clothes. She's also found the fibers inside of fish.
They are floating in the water, and everything that is floating in the water is food.
Rios says more research is needed to see what toxics are attaching themselves to the plastic. That will be a big question for the Mississippi because a variety of harmful pollutants wash into the river. Still, the river is much cleaner than it was 40 years ago, and the report notes it supports bald eagles, mussels, and many fish species. Whitney Clark is executive director of Friends of the Mississippi River.
The river is a complex living ecosystem, and many factors affect its health. And you can have some indicators pointing down and some pointing up, and it's very dynamic and they change.
Mercury and industrial chemicals have declined. That means more wildlife and looser health guidelines on eating fish out of the river. One thing that hasn't changed for the better is pollution coming from farm fields. Nitrate has increased 44% since 1976, according to the report. And a study from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency shows more than half of the nitrogen in the Mississippi and Minnesota rivers comes from cropland drainage. That's the flexible plastic tubing installed under corn and soybean fields to improve drainage and boost yields. Clark says the state should require permits for new tile drainage systems so that the state has a better understanding of regional hydrology. Sean Schottler of the St. Croix Watershed Research Station says changes in land use and drainage have resulted in a nearly 25% increase in flow since the 1930s.
And flow in the river is the pulse of the watershed. Just like your pulse is symptomatic of what's going on in your body, the flow in the river is symptomatic of what's going on in the watershed.
He says high flows aren't always bad, but they can cause erosion and bring more pollutants into the river. Better drainage systems might be one solution, but Schottler and others speaking at the Mississippi Report's release say we also need different crops. Perennials that cover the landscape year-round, protecting soils and soaking up nitrogen. Trevor Russell of Friends of the Mississippi River co-authored the report. He says Minnesota is growing too many annual crops, a practice that leaves the land bare and vulnerable part of the year. But he says he doesn't expect farmers to make the switch on their own.
It's all well and good to say we need more perennial crops in the landscape, but unless those things are profitable, that's not going to happen. We don't have the tools to compel that kind of widespread landscape change.
He says there's hope in a couple of state-funded programs looking at new crops for biofuels and other products. Yet even if we clean up water coming off of farm fields, the Mississippi also faces an urban problem. Road salt, which is already building up in some area lakes and streams. Reporting on the environment, Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Federal prosecutors have charged five people, including three former executives, with siphoning more than $20 million from Starkey Laboratories. Authorities say the men embezzled from the Eden Prairie-based hearing aid company over the course of 9 years. Matt Sepik has the story.
The federal charges listed on the 34-page indictment range from mail and wire fraud to conspiracy to commit money laundering. At the top of the bill is Jerry Ruzicka, Starkey's former president. Also charged are Scott Nelson, the one-time chief financial officer, and former vice president of human resources, Larry Miller. Starkey fired the three executives last September, but in the 9 years prior, prosecutors say the men schemed with business associates Jeff Taylor and Larry Hagan to to rip off the privately held company and founder Bill Austin. With Austin focusing most of his attention on the Starkey Foundation, prosecutors say he entrusted his company's operations to Ruzicka and the other leaders. The indictment says some of the defendants set up a complex web of sham companies and dummy entities. Ruzicka and Taylor allegedly used one called Archer Consulting to embezzle more than $7.6 million from Starkey through phony invoices. Prosecutors say the men used two other fake companies they falsely claimed were part of Starkey to get discounts on hearing aid components from Sonian US, a parts maker where defendant Jeff Taylor was president. They allegedly resold the components to other manufacturers for illicit profits and collected fake commissions. Paul Voller, a business and law professor at the University of Minnesota, says the scam prosecutors describe was broad, sophisticated, and touched many aspects of the firm.
The numbers are small, the numbers are large, from tens of thousands for certain alleged fraudulent activities related to components to millions of dollars related to alleged fraudulent issuances of stock.
According to the indictment, the phony stock deal netted Ruzicka and Nelson $15 million after they gave themselves restricted shares in Starkey's retail affiliate and then paid themselves for terminating the grants. Voller says the indictments raise questions about who was minding the store, from company attorneys to outside auditors. As a privately held company, he says Starkey is not subject to the same level of outside scrutiny as a public firm.
But there's still the role for these professionals that provide oversight, oversight on procedures, oversight on substance, and they're supposed to ask the tough questions as part of their job. And they ask those questions even when the alleged perpetrators of the fraud are the senior management that hires them.
Voller says the fact that federal prosecutors indicted individuals and not the company itself indicates that Starkey and owner Bill Austin were victims and not perpetrators. In a statement, a company spokesman says, as the victim, Starkey will continue to cooperate with the government while focusing on the core mission of its business. None of the five defendants could be reached for comment. In a statement, John Connard, an attorney representing Ruzicka, says his client was a dedicated employee for 38 years and did nothing wrong. U.S. Attorney Andy Luger says the defendants are expected to make their first appearances in Minneapolis federal court later this week. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.